Section 8,
Section 8.
Just specifies that if we do sell those, the state guaranteed veterans bonds, that those proceeds will be used for loans that qualify under the act, and it's just there in connection with implementation of, for anticipated implementation of that program.
Okay, without objection, then we'll approve that. Section 9.
Section 9 is the usury language exemption, and that is under consideration. We'll work that out with the bankers and come up with some mutually agreeable language.
But it's a limited usury. We got that. It's okay. We've approved that. Okay. This is the eligibility section, and is this the residency for?
Yeah.
Okay. We did not approve section 10. Without prejudice, we'll turn that down at this time. Maybe take it up later.
I think what we did not approve is the deletion of the five-year residency, but certain sections of 9.
Well, they're already in the statute, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that right, Eric? If we're not going to make the change, we don't need to mess with the portion of the law. Just stay there. Section 11.
Section 11 is additional language that Mr. Walport has recommended in connection with the issuance of the state guaranteed bonds.
Okay, is anybody, Commissioner, it's okay with you?
Any objections?
Any objection? This doesn't have, what kind of effect does this have? Is this just boilerplate stuff, or does this have some effect on our bond? Thank you. Section 12.
Watch it blow up or something.
Section 12 qualifies under the same category as 11.
This is how we get changed the law. That
yeah.
How does that differ from, I don't get that.
We've never had a state guaranteed issue of an agency before. We've always issued general obligations to the state. These are, have the same credit effect as the GO, but they're actually bonds of the corporation with a guarantee attached to it by the state. And so this additional language is necessary in order to accommodate this new procedure.
Yeah, I'm still not following you. What would be different? What's the difference between
the two? Well, the bond, what it says now, is a bond of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
And that's the state.
And it's guaranteed by the state of Alaska. Some of the other bills that are in the legislature simply talk about state general obligation bonds for veterans, and they'll refer to HFC as the issuer and the manager of the funds that would make the mortgage loan.
The state GO bonds are sold at public sale for 3 or 4 bids. AHFC's current practice is to privately negotiate the sale of bonds. And so what this does is conform it with the state statute for the bonds committee to public sale.
So because it's state-backed, it has to go more of a public nature as opposed to a negotiated nature, and this is what calls for that or allows for that. Is that right? So it just makes it in conformity with our other GO practices. Okay. Section 12, I assume there's no objection unless I hear it. Mm-hmm. We'll approve that section. Section 12. That's the same
13.
Same kind of language.
We just did 12, so we're done.
No, we're
down to 13.
Oh, we were just talking about 12?
Right.
Okay.
13 is the effective date.
And it was 11 then the boilerplate that we were talking about?
I
Okay, so 12.
This is.
12 is semi-bulletproof.
Yeah, okay, and 13 is just effective date. Other than no, we went to, did we approve any other changes that that weren't in that bill? They were all incorporated.
Yeah.
Everything was already in there. See how easy it is for you?
That's great.
The only exception was the.
I was gonna say, why was he here?
Was the was the subsidy for the triplex and fourplex, and they're working
right.
That out, right?
Yeah.
That's the only exception.
Well, we didn't accept one portion on
right.
The change in veterans, and
right.
We held two to get some information back.
Just to.
And well,
just to get
there's water. Okay, what are we waiting for from you guys? We're waiting for. The new the new multifamily proposal
plus the following section,
and then we'd want to know the cost associated with it, and then you're going to change that. We're liberalizing that second program. We want to find out what kind of net impact that has, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the net impact of the seconds for purchase.
Another thing that may be considered in connection with that liberalization of those second programs is we do have funds in place and we do have the program as it exists, and that there may be some merit to including the language necessary to liberalize those second programs in the request for additional bond authorization. And having the program, the changes effective immediately so that you don't have borrowers under the second programs with a rate established based on the structure right now and then all of a sudden change.
What you're saying is put those changes in with the bill that's going ahead of this one.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And you know, we've got this one bill that increases their bond authorization that has to go relatively quickly. And since this one's such a big bill, I'll probably go to pre-conference. The other one might just go, we're just going to zap that one ahead at first. We don't have it in this committee, though, do we? It's in finance, I think. But I was going to ask for a vote of the committee to send a letter to finance asking them to, you know, to move it along. And, we
did could... Is it in the finance subcommittee?
Yeah, it's Cuddy's subcommittee. And, I was thinking maybe we could ask them to put this change on it. We do have a draft that was trying to get to there, and what we need is the new language which liberalized the second for purchase. And then we'll put it together on CS, and without objection, we'll draft a letter to the subcommittee chairman and the finance chairman asking them to move that out. Is that a House bill or Senate bill?
Senate bill. 593.
The Senate bill, so could move quickly. And how, after you get that bill, how long would it take you to change those regulations or whatever you got to conform with the new concept? It would take that.
Sure.
I mean, you got to go through all sorts of processes.
Well, it's a public notice. I don't know if there'd be the justification to do it on a monthly basis.
I know. If we'd have exempted you from the APA, you wouldn't have to go through all the treasury. Commissioner?
Our AHSC enjoys an expedited regulation process in its statute. It's not the normal 30 days before you can adopt it, and then it's 30 days after you file the intent of it before it takes effect. I think if you've got the regulations drafted, you can adopt them in as little as 2 weeks or 15 days.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Can we assume that you'd try to expedite it? I mean, I hate to see you start a new program and you have these things that you had to conform with because the statute was incorrectly drafted, essentially, and then some guys start and then, you know, you put out all this information on the program, now you have to change it, but I see your information after going crazy back there.
Well, expedite the process.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense.
I still want to make any promises we can't keep at this time.
Yeah, I understand. But your intent is to go as quickly as you can, that's all we need. Okay, now, we still have a couple of problems. Did you want to talk about the disparity in the time to process loans from Fairbanks, or are you?
I talked to it at lunchtime, that's fine.
And now what we want to talk about is the rural program and the consolidation of that program with the non-conforming program.
They're working on it.
Do you have a position on that?
Well, I can't speak for the board on this issue. I've taken a position basically of non-opposition. There are reasons pro and con.
Let me ask the commissioner then. Commissioner?
Sorry,
about the fact that the board has to take a position on it either. I think that it's fair to say that if the legislature has a preference where it would go, I would support whichever way that preference you want.
Well, let's work it this way. Let's get the non-conforming people up here. Not that you're personally non-conforming, but that you're
working. You didn't have to say that.
Yeah.
Do you want to stay here? Stick around, though, because you're going to have to...
conform.
You might want to ask us some questions about this. Well, we're going to be interested in levels of funding if we do consolidate. Commissioner, you want to come up to Commissioner? Well, since you're sort of the bridge between the two programs, if you want to sit.
I want to go on the show.
You feel more secure back there, it's okay. No, it's all right. I'm just kidding.
There's a general sending the troops up the front line.
Sure. Maybe he doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
I don't want to
okay, you have a. I'll just address the question.
Mr. Chairman, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Dave Rose, and I'm the acting interim temporary director of the Housing Assistance Program within the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Speaking directly to this question, in the 4 weeks that I've been in this position, I've had a chance to take a look at this program as well as the HFC program. And I think one would have to sort of come to the conclusion that it would make sense to run a consolidated program, whether that consolidated program is within HFC or whether it's within Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Is really a judgment decision that's got to be weighed by this and this group in the legislature. But it makes sense to offer a program where, number one, you have remote offices out in an area. And, of course, the division does have an office in Nome, Kotzebue, Dillingham, Bethel, Fairbanks, and Anchorage. So it does offer some outreach, if you will. It certainly makes a lot of sense to have a program where there's one set of parameters, easier to understand, easier to explain, easier to follow. And it also makes sense to have a single program for the rural area where interest rates are offered at the same and consistent rate as opposed to a disparate rate. So I think that the bottom line really is consistency, ease of presentation, ease of service, and I think you have to look at the capabilities between the two agencies to make a determination of whether or not you should consolidate and with whom. Certainly between the two organizations, you have all of the ingredients you need for a successful program if you put them together, package them, and sell them correctly. I would, Mr. Chairman, want to talk for a minute about, if I could, on the not only the consolidation, but the interest rate question. Do you want to discuss that as part of it, or do you want to segment it?
Yeah, I do want to discuss that. You know, I in talking to committee members, I find no real objection from anyone yet to, in any case on merging the two programs. And the proposal that we have is to take the HFC program and merge it into the CRA non-performing program. So we, you know, I think what we need to, well, I don't think we need to be convinced of that. The question is, you know, is there a substantial group of people that you're, you know, the people that you're trying to help out there really opposed to it? Are the housing authorities and the other people that you work with, are they, well, how do they see it? Do they feel like they're losing something by shifting it over? And are we losing anything by combining it?
Well,
and I understand the interest rates.
Yes, that's the obvious loss. Certainly, if you were to combine them at the price of raising the interest rate, and that was perceived as
well. The
price.
Perception is going to be that the interest rate increased because we combined the programs and we picked the higher rate. But
if that's
whether
the
or not
perception,
we,
then
whether or not we
unfair.
Combine the programs, we're going to increase the interest rate. I think to the on the AHSC rural program. I assume because even though the members of the committee are real interested, at least last year, even though they're real interested in continuing these programs, they're also interested in keeping the rate close as possible to. You know, the natural rate that we don't get, you know, we get closer and closer to the market, hopefully someday, you know, all the way to it. And that's why we tried to apply the ratchet. I believe a motion was made last year to apply the ratchet to every rate, and we just missed the one that was done by statute. Otherwise, we would have had the non-conforming program at the lower rate also.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in direct answer to your question, I don't know of any opposition to a consolidation. The only opposition I would know about would be with respect to interest rate. Now, you must recognize, though, that the inherent in the Housing Assistance Division legislation is the opportunity to do direct lending, whereas HFC does not offer that.
Well, that's an advantage, though, that the...
Well, it depends on where your complaint comes from.
Yeah.
That has not been abused. And I know of no complaint and no single instance where there has been a problem with respect to housing assistance.
Well, I'm real concerned that you know, we don't go into a direct, you know, full scale and direct lending, and you know, try to move out the banks in the state. But so far I haven't seen it, you know, too abused. I think we might need to have some pretty clear understanding about where the lines are drawn in terms of when you go and when you don't go, because if it's all possible for the financial institutions to be involved, I think the legislature would prefer that. At least that's what I've felt from people. But does HFC have any outreach capability that you wouldn't have, or do they have, because of their vast size, you know, any kind of ability to help the borrower that you wouldn't have on the non-conforming, you know, that kind of analysis is what I...
No, I think that the only judgment you can make in that area at this instance in time is that HFC does have more experienced underwriting review type people, simply because their program is so large, they have a large organization. They can make better analyses at this point in time.
Can that be remedied? Yeah.
With experience, sure, and with a few mistakes, yes.
Well, would it make sense to take it and merge the programs into the HFC program? Would that make more sense?
It may. If you're, you know, I find it a little bit difficult because I sit here as Dave Rose as a volunteer helping DCRA, but also is somebody who would, might want to be objective. Yes, it could make just as much sense on the HFC side. The only difference is that you would then have to put AHFC into the branch office business, as we are, and you would probably have to have them pick up the responsibility for information dissemination on all loan programs, which we are.
Yeah, that's a problem for us, because so far we've kept HFC sort of, you know, a little more distinct than...
We do see, for example, the office in Nome doing a tremendous amount of work. The office in Fairbanks doing an awful lot of work. That outreach does make a difference when you look at the statistics. For example, Fairbanks loans to date greatly exceed Anchorage. Nome comes in third before Juneau, just barely after Anchorage. That outreach does make a difference.
Representative Buckle, did I miss your question?
He responded to it, but I was more interested also, as far as the interest rate, was also the cost differential that Mr. McMillan spoke about this morning.
Yes, I'd like to address that. There are several things I think that you ought to consider. I think that the testimony you heard was very accurate, and that is that there certainly is a higher cost in terms of transport, a higher cost in terms of construction, certainly a higher cost in terms of cost of living. And the 8.75 rate certainly makes up for those differentials. AHFC, of course, had a rationale before with the 8.75, even though it was by regulation, it didn't just happen. There was public meetings, as I understand, some investigation on AHFC's part, and they concluded in their best judgment that 8.75, at least at that point in time, was a correct figure. Now, with respect to moving it up, let me draw the parallel of the concept of the Rogers Ratchet, different type of mechanism. But remember, in the considerations of Rogers Ratchet, there was a desire not to move interest rates up to parity or fairness or equilibrium, whatever you want to call it, in one fell swoop, because there would be distress. So I would urge that if there is any desire to move off the 8.75, if you feel that you must abandon the considerations of cost of transport, construction, and living, then do so on the same rationale as the Rogers Ratchet, which is a small move of a tick of a percent a year or whatever it is that makes a difference. If you move directly from 8.75 to 12.75, you will see distress and you will see a lot of adverse comment.
Well, you know, there's differentials in cost of living and in cost of construction, but there really isn't any differential, is there, in the rural areas in terms of, you know, the going rate on the investment of your money? Is there, I mean, maybe it makes more sense to put an area cost differential on the $90,000 and say that somebody, in order to be getting the same value, you know, the same utility, you got to give somebody in the rural areas $120,000. $110,000 that is subsidized, as opposed to $90,000 in Anchorage, because of the differential. You see what I'm saying? And maybe we should put the differential on that, because then you're talking about, you know, purchasing power. And that's where the parity might come in, because you get the same kind of house, you know, for $120,000 as you would for $90,000, and so you end up with the state providing you the same utility. And even though the dollars are greater that would be there, it seems like the interest rate differential is a kind of a less exact method of obtaining that, of handling that disparity in terms of cost of construction and cost of living.
Yeah, frankly, Mr. Chairman, I think really that the interest rate falls more in the realm of political decision than it does in rationality.
Yeah.
But in any event, I think you make a tragic mistake if you try to move from 8.75 directly to 12.75 without passing go.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to raise one other issue, and something that Dave and I kicked around. And that is, when you talk in terms of subsidization, I think you have to understand there's a difference in a subsidy off of a general fund appropriation versus a subsidy off of a bond rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so
both these programs are directly out of the general fund.
That's correct. There is, and we do have some figures. Did we pass those on? Yeah. Why don't we just pass it on?
Let me stop there. I mean, if
that's not the one I was looking for.
If we subsidize $9,000 on the regular program, that takes us less than $90,000.
Say again.
Well, wait a minute. We went through this about 8 times. Is the subsidy really any different? No, it isn't. It isn't, because the opportunity cost is equal to the same in the long run. Is that true? Didn't we go through this?
I think when you net it all out, you come to about the same place. The sheet that you have before you indicates, though, and this is a sheet we tried to draw up, which showed the consolidated program. And what this sheet attempts to indicate is that if you consolidate the two programs, we can provide the same or better service, program-wide, not only for the non-conforming, but the HFC program and the senior program. We can provide the same or equal program at $15 million less than was requested. But we also make a distinction. If you look at 19 fiscal 383 needs, we would project a program level of $50 million if you're talking at the 12 and three-quarters, three-eighths rate. A $65 million program if you're still at the 8 3/4 rate. We also indicate, and we would want to talk about senior citizen housing in a few minutes, but there's a need for adjustment in that program. But I think the bottom line is, when you get all done, is two things. Number one, we can provide a good program with outreach at $15 million less. And number two, we can accommodate a problem in the senior citizens program, housing program, which is also critical.
Is 875 our committee bill? So what you're saying is that we could stay at 8 3/4 in the consolidated program and increase senior citizen program by 10 over what's in 875 and stay even in terms of cost.
No, actually you get $15 million ahead. Because what we would do is we would eliminate.
Oh, because this doesn't show a carry forward?
This is a $15 million carryover, which you take.
They can be reduced. Oh, I thought they said they are reduced.
No, you take that $15 million carryover.
So we could appropriate $70 million and we could have
a
consolidated program at the 8 3/4 and a $10 million increase in the senior citizen program. And we'd still be saving
$15 million. Now, let me just say one other thing, Mr. Chairman. As you know, the Housing Assistance Division has had some difficulties with respect to management over the last period of time. On or about mid-February, about the 17th or so, a management was changed in which the director of the program and the deputy director left the organization. I was asked on loan to step in as a volunteer to try to put this thing together management-wise and get it back on track. Since that date, we've had a chance to get some reports, some data to see where the program is and where we're going, and this is why we find the program status is what it is.
You find another $15 million.
We found another $15 million is what it is, but we also found some shortfall.
Is that year-to-date, or are you assuming that you're still going to have some... For the end of this fiscal year, you've counted whatever you get.
We've counted.
And you're still going to have 15 that you can roll.
I think the reason I preface my remarks.
We don't need to, I mean, that's an ongoing appropriation, right? It doesn't lapse.
That's correct.
So we don't need to reappropriate it.
I do want to assure you, and the reason for the remark is that although I don't intend to volunteer for this the rest of my life and only intend to be here for another 2 or 3, 4 weeks. There is a search going on for new management. We have more than 50 applicants and some really top-notch people. It would be my expectation, with the systems now having been put in line, other systems to be put in line to follow, that you need have no fear with respect to the overall management of the program. I think you'll see a better managed program from here on in, and certainly the department has demonstrated the ability to recognize problems and attempt to correct them. So you should have no particular fear with respect to past management.
Are the problems with management in the nature of a technical good accounting or good practices kind of thing, or standard practices kind of thing? Is that the nature of the problem?
No, Mr. Chairman, I think it was just basically direction. I think you had, frankly, a couple of individuals who were charged with responsibility who did not get along. And as a result, they spent a great deal of time apparently arguing with each other and not executing the program. And whatever the reason for their non-compatibility, I can't judge. I wasn't there.
Any questions?
Well, I think it's basically a good program, and I have supported it. Unfortunately, with the personality, I think it was a personality conflict more than, because I thought it was going well, and then suddenly it fell apart. But I would be inclined to try to save it. If we have to merge, we merge, but in every case, we should try to save the program.
Would you be interested in combining the two?
Well, if it's in the best interest of those two programs.
I mean, we've got three options in regard to that. We can leave them like they are, we can combine them and put them in HSC, we can combine them and put them in non-conformity.
I don't mind the program to lose its identity. I think that if you put it in AAPFC, maybe you'd have to create a separate non-conforming division rather than just merge and then suddenly it gets swallowed into the program.
Well,
but if we can do that, no, maybe we can consolidate.
Are you saying that that you achieve a, I mean, is this just some sort of is there really a savings by combining the program?
Yeah, I think there is, Mr. Chairman. You know, both programs are somewhat new, and it's difficult to say. You could not get me to give sworn evidence one way or the other with respect to the saving. I think the real saving really is in terms of understanding the program and service on the program. Because I think if you work the numbers, I think you're going to come out with the same identical numbers. The advantage of a consolidation is you pick up one way or the other. You pick up the branch offices, the Nome, Fairbanks, Dillingham, Bethel operations, and you pick up a single set of understandable applications, a single system. In dollars, I think probably there's no real saving in the sense that it's just a question of programming. And both programs, at least in my objective judgment, look like they were over-programmed.
Any
what do you mean by that, over-programmed?
Ask for more money than they can spend.
So it's just a financial thing rather than a red tape?
Sure, because AHFC devotes, I think, one in a fraction people to the program. Mm-hmm. That's an experienced underwriter. If it combined into DCRA, you would not, you take that person. You wouldn't save personnel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd save anything that you could really identify. The only thing you would gain would be a, I'd say, outreach and an easier set of rules.
Mr. Chairman, let me just advance some programmatic reasons why the programs should be combined. One is that the current HSC statute has some limitations as to where they can lend. They cannot lend in any area. They can only lend in areas under 3,500 population that does not have road or rail access to Anchorage and Fairbanks. Now,
that's the HSC program?
That's correct.
Yeah. Didn't we apply that to non-conforming also?
No, what we have in non-conforming is a split where we have to lend 80% of our funds in areas under 3,500 population and 20% in areas over that.
Oh yeah, right.
And that has caused a problem.
We had service districts. Do we throw that service district stuff in there? Can't remember. Do we still have that service district line?
No, but just in case you ever asked for it, we've always kept records by. We're keeping records by election district, by census enumeration district.
Well, by the way, I mean, how's that language working? Because that was the classic political compromise. I mean, we just had two opposite concepts, and we just What we did is we compromised in such a way that was so confusing that both sides thought they were getting better off than, you know, each side thought they were winning, you know. So
well, 80-20,
as soon as we got that, we took it. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. That's basically what happened.
Well, 80-20 seems to have worked out, you know, fairly well. The problem that you come up to if you do come into one is in Fairbanks, which has chewed up an awful lot of money for the program. And of course, Fairbanks is deserving. They're probably 20%. So between Fairbanks and Anchorage working on that element, we're out of urban money just about on that allocation, which means that there could be some problems in the Fairbanks and Anchorage area. But hopefully we've handled a lot of housing stock in both of those communities.
Well, it's better off not to touch with that. It's kind of a delicate compromise. I don't even know why I brought it up. Really bad point. Well, what's the pleasure of the committee? Let's take up, you know, we got two questions. One's the combining, the other's the interest rate question. The options on combining are three. The option on the interest rate is also three. Take one or the other or some compromise between them.
Well, let me just ask, before we answer that question, let me just ask some other questions. You know, it seems to me that we have to make a decision what's in the best benefit of the state. I mean, we've got to consolidate and get some more money for other programs, but also what's best for the urban as well as the rural areas of the state. And you named the three options, and I still, in my mind, haven't decided which of one of the three would satisfy all our needs the best way we can. Unless you have a personal...
let me say this for you, Phillips. From a pure industrial engineering, management analysis, functional analyst type standpoint, it would seem you would ought to, on the face of it, it would seem you ought to have one housing program, and that one housing program ought to be where the professional housing people are, which is HFC. Mm-hmm. That's the simplex, direct, analytical decision which everyone should reach, except that rural housing has been generally ignored. There's been a long history of problems, a long history of dissension with respect to whether or not AHFC under former management was able to meet the need. And so a lot of your colleagues representing rural areas felt that it was absolutely necessary to play catch-up ball and to distinguish and segment a rural program that could be identified, that could be looked at, examined, and followed until such time as they succeeded playing catch up with the urban area. I think when you look at it from that aspect, we may still be playing catch up ball. So at least for the present period, you probably ought to segment the program, concentrate on the problem area, and then at some later date, follow the true management engineering type approach, which would consolidate it all with the housing professional. That would be my best judgment. So I would put them together with top-notch emphasis on the rural before raising them.
Russ, what were the three options again?
On combining them?
Yeah, or you said just leave it alone, we combine them, or put Alaska?
We can leave it alone like they are. We can combine them and put them in CRA or combine them and put them in HFC. That's
it. Seems to me that, you know, I'll just give you my gut reaction right now. It just seems to me, from what I know about it as of this minute, probably combine and put in CRA. As CRA is probably the most sensitive to the rural areas of the state, because I can just see some problems.
Okay.
You know, nothing against Alaska Housing, but, you know, I can see a poor guy out there in the rural areas trying to get a loan. Calling up if he has a phone, saying what's happened to my loan.
I've had a chance to talk to all the committee members previously. I think that's our consensus. So without objection, we'll combine the programs into the CNRA program. And now the question of the interest rate. My position is that I don't know. You know, for years I've spent all my effort trying to get the HFC into the rural program and non-performing into the rural program, trying to help them out. Now. I feel like increasing their interest rate seems a contradictory, but under the current crunch, when everybody else is paying the higher rate, I I don't know what else to do. Any other thoughts on that, Thelma or John?
Well, it's really a real problem because if you provide for cost differential, you know, the cost escalates. But if you don't,
mm-hmm.
you have a very low demand for the, it's high demand right now, but the demand is not as great. So I don't know what we, I think we should review that a little bit more, see what we can provide. That would be my recommendation.
I definitely think it ought to be adjusted upward, but I also recognize what an impact of an unexpected increase of what you're planning on can do mm-hmm. to you.
How much?
Based on what happened last summer to HFC.
What's the HFC's actual in the rural and remote program expenditure out there this year? How many loans you made, you know?
We've done about $16 million this fiscal year.
And what do you expect it to be by the end of the fiscal year, do you know?
Our max for this year was 20. So we'll get there sometime this year.
Okay, and then how about non-conforming program, other numbers?
Well, with our record keeping, it's a little bit difficult to tell, but against fiscal 80 funds, we would expect it to be 25 this year.
This year.
So they got right here.
So I'm just trying to see what the impact, you know, how many people were going to be, or a portion of it. Why did anybody go to non-conforming? I don't get that.
Well, in the bush area where you haven't got septic and you haven't got water, you have no option because HFC won't take them.
Oh, is that right? There is a difference between the programs.
Yeah, ours is sort of deformed housing.
If you merge them, what would you do to those requirements? Would you let everybody in?
Yeah, we would in fact take care of everybody.
Would you rename the program so it's not non-conforming anymore?
Yeah, it would be housing assistance or something like that.
Do we have a statute prepared that accomplishes this, or where are we in terms of that?
We had drafted some statutory changes and wanted to get a better feel from you as to precisely what you wanted before we jumped into the nuts and bolts.
I'm just wondering whether that's a real complicated event, because whether we got to repeal stuff from HFC and
change your whole statute. You don't really do anything in the HFC statute.
Just don't fund it.
I don't see that there's any repealers. I've looked through it. I haven't seen a repealer.
Is that right?
I think that's right. There's very little in the HFC statute about rural loans mm-hmm. at all. It's almost all been done by regulation.
We probably ought to change the name of non-conforming if it's not just a non-conforming program, just so that people can kind of figure out what it is. So.
Basically, we call it the housing assistance division.
Is that just something I say when I say, is that, do
no,
you have a non-conforming?
The actual fund is non-conforming.
Yeah, okay. No, that's correct.
Okay, well, as long as you think you can get there, you know, with the concept without us getting into it, I wouldn't want to, but as far as the interest rate goes, if we merge the programs, we don't have to change the law, right? Because you can't loan anything except the ratchet.
That's correct. Our statute deals with ratchet.
So
Mr. Chairman, I
would. The people that want the lower rate or some graduation towards it, that would need to pass a motion to allow that.
I would urge that you do it possibly by legislation if you wish. Just handle that section in such a way that you do it, get back up to the ratchet level in two stages or something like that.
Well, the problem with it, the problem with doing that, if you do it on any kind of predictable basis, is that you really accelerate the demand. Didn't we have that problem with, in HFC, I think, when we mm-hmm. had a specific date when the rate was going to change and mm-hmm. everybody tried to get in under the wire and just really sort of backed up the pipeline, made all sorts of, am I remembering that right?
Oh, that's right. You had $22 or $23 million caught.
We've experienced that several times. When the Alden legislation was first introduced in 1979, AHSC went through almost 3 months worth of money in 28 days.
Yeah.
Also, when the state had the ad hoc $35 million a month, 9.5% money, the first month subscription went okay, and then in 15 days, the second 2 month subscription went, and they were, we had, I forget how many, it was almost $100 million in a pipeline.
104.
People who ended up being cut off, it had to be taken care of.
Yeah.
So we've experienced it several times, that there's a real rush to catch it live.
Well, that was the beauty of the Rogers Ratchet. It was complicated enough that it was kind of hard to figure out if it did.
It
the run on the program when people can predict that something's going to happen in 1 month, but I don't know whether that's a problem to worry about, but it has caused a lot of dislocation of the demand in the past. I know there was some. What happens is if people accelerate their decisions, if they weren't even thinking about buying a house and within maybe not even for 2 years, they go ahead and make the decision to do it to capture the lower rate because they see some sort of generalized trend, and then you get everybody at once, and it really changes things. Does anybody? I guess the only question is whether or not we want to move slowly towards the ratchet, or whether we want to ratchet towards the ratchet.
Double ratchet.
That ought to be complicated enough. So when you put on a double ratchet, nobody will figure it out. I have to have a computer model to get there.
Oh, boy. Let's see.
Richard Bedesworth, what do you think about that? Got any preference on those two? Okay, what I'll do is ask Mr. Rose to get back with a suggestion for getting... in terms of your graduation towards the ratchet, and keeping in mind this problem that we've experienced, if you make a determination that you don't think that that's going to be a problem, well, that's fine, but if it is, then maybe you can figure out a way to make it work in such a way that it doesn't accelerate the demand on us.
Let us give you a proposal with our draft legislation.
Okay, and then we'd need a guess as to the impact on the funds. Be probably something less than the 65, but more than the 50. But I
don't
know.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else on
the only other thing, Mr. Chairman, on this whole area is the other part of the housing assistance program, which is the senior citizens program, which we have sort of addressed, but last year we received an appropriation for 83 in the amount of $8 million and had no requests this year with respect to senior citizens, having assumed that we had received it last year. In examining the program, however, we see that the needs for housing is substantial to the point where our requests, and this is actual communities identified as needing senior housing, is about $18 million as opposed to an appropriation of $8 million. And Representative Adams spoke to me just yesterday with respect to Barrow, that isn't even on the list, which would probably be about another $2 million. So what we have attempted to do in reprogramming all of the assets of the division is to request the $10 million, as you saw on the sheet, which would bring us more in line with the needs of senior housing. We're just experiencing the same problem that everyone else is with multifamily housing, is that we're seeing a lot of seniors being forced out of existing housing stock, and there is a desire to accommodate that need.
What's the limits on that program now? Is that the 20% have to be low income? Am I thinking of something else?
No. This is strictly, there is a problem with respect to the legislation that was passed, or the appropriation last year, which said $8 million would be provided provided there was a federal contribution as well. And that's tied to the appropriation. And the federal degree of participation varies depending on the program and the amount of federal funds available. We are also recommending that that appropriation legislation be somewhat adjusted not to require federal funding in light of the national situation where we don't know whether or not Reaganomics is going to provide us any money for family senior housing construction.
Does that take, was that, does anyone know whether that was in the authorization statute or in the appropriation?
It was in the appropriation.
Yeah, HB 150. I have a question on that. It's more of a provincial question than anything else. I'm trying to find out some information. I don't want to use up all this time here right now, but
it's on the sheet. I can answer.
Well, I'll talk to you later, but it's about Chugach Senior Citizen Center, and I'm having some difficulty with some information getting from the Department of CRA and exactly where we are. But I'll talk to you guys later on that. But it's related to HB 150.
Excuse me. So specifically, what are you asking for? You're asking for an additional appropriation of $10 million in addition to the $8 million that's programmed to go for this year if we don't repeal that appropriation.
And release from the federal funds contribution requirement.
That's the only two things you need?
That's correct.
For this program? Okay. Now,
but, Mr. Chairman, you realize that with this total package that we have proposed,
we still
have a net saving of $15 million.
Yeah. Well, more than that, 15 plus whatever we saved from the 65.
That's correct.
How long are you thinking about, in terms of graduating that in? I'd say we would want it no more than the end of, by the end of next fiscal year, we'd want it to be the same rate.
Okay. That's the.
Okay, there's two questions. Well, let's get to one other point before we decide on these two questions. The we got here loans for home on home sites and open entry lands. Who's that?
I'm going to let Richard address that.
Mr. Chairman, that's an initiative of the department. One of our problems has been our statute gives considerable flexibility in what types of title we can accept in terms of land to provide funds for housing. However, one of the areas that's not covered is home site land that's made available through the Department of Natural Resources. And this has been identified to us as a problem in the interior and the southeast of individuals who want to build non-conforming housing on their land so that they can, in fact, eventually meet the state requirements to receive their title to their land. Last year, Senator Bennett put a bill in that would essentially set up a guarantee fund in the Department of Revenue and also allow us to accept certain assurances to provide funds for housing in this type of land. But we're promoting an amendment to our statute that says we can accept assurances from the Commissioner of Natural Resources that the title will be conveyed on that land upon successful completion of the requirements through the department. We've seen some considerable demand in this area in the southeast.
How much money?
It's hard to estimate total demand. I don't think we've done it.
The demand here in southeast, mostly over in Haines?
Actually, I got two calls from Petersburg last week.
Boy, I don't know.
Do you have any, you say you had a couple calls from Petersburg. What kind of demand is there for this? Do you have
water
kind of requests or?
We did have a meeting in Southeast as part of a Mullen forum that traveled around the state, and we are having ongoing meetings in Southeast, and considerable numbers of people are showing up at the meetings asking for some kind of assistance.
What kind of numbers?
I don't have specific numbers.
And they're asking for, now let me get this straight, monies for like water?
Asking for ability to apply for the non-conforming housing loan program.
Is it not eligible right now?
That's right, because they don't have a clear title, the type of title required by our statute.
But you don't totally require a clear title, do you?
No.
Because we set up that problem to get around the interim conveyance.
That's right. And you know, if it looks like it's real, apparent, it's only a question of bureaucracy and paperwork, yeah, we can accommodate. But here, where there's really no clear title. And
because they don't get it until they, it's a catch-22. They don't get it until they do certain things. They can't do certain things unless they can access the fund and build it.
We view this move as consistent with the general policy to encourage people to live on that land or occupy it to meet their requirements as part of the natural resource.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. The problem is, I mean, I get called every day by somebody wanting an expansion of the program, you know. I mean, people want to be able to have loans for unimproved land, and, you know, there's all sorts of good reasons for all these, but...
loans for duck shacks on the, just hit the flats over there, all kinds of stuff.
Well, the thing is that...
duck shack?
I wish I knew how much it was going to cost, you.
What, let me ask, that, does the department have a position on that? I mean, or is just, you're just bringing it up for our...
Yeah,
they're four?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, these were numbers prepared by prior to Mr. Rose's entrance onto the scene here, but there were hearings held on our regulations from January through March of 81, and the information prepared at that time said it's anticipated the request of approximately 150 to 180 new construction loans and 30 to 50 rehabilitation or completion loans would be anticipated. These loans would range between $30,000 and $149,000. And again, I don't want to give these numbers because I don't feel real comfortable with them, but what I have here is this demand will increase the funding level needed by the division by approximately $12 million. Now, in order to accommodate the committee's concern in this area, you can simply open this up as part of our program, give us the dollars we're talking about for the overall program, and see what happens.
Well, I have a problem with that. Representative Desmond?
Yeah, if we could go back and pursue this title business on these home site lands. Why is it that you don't feel you can use the same criteria that was established for rural areas where they don't have the land entitlement yet on those home site lands?
Part of the catch-22 is that you must prove up on your land before you can get title. In the open entry. Here, we're in the normal program, what we've got is something wrong with the conveyance that will be cured, that can be cured. Everybody signs certificates that it will be cured, but it has to go through federal paperwork or state, and it really just screws a poor little guy up.
It has nothing to do with what the person who's on the land. It's all out beyond his control. It's a governmental program.
He's done everything he could
do.
On
the home site, the guy could default.
He could not prove it up.
And not prove up.
That's correct.
That's the loan on it why he's lost out.
That's correct.
Okay, you want to accelerate this thing? Well,
there's people getting on a plane, so we've got to get moving.
Okay. I'll ask
you. Here, is there a motion to do this? Okay, we're not going to do it. Next question is additional flexibility to use their funds for senior citizen housing. That's what we talked about.
That's the removal of the federal contribution
requirement. And supplemental housing grants will
that
like
really
additional
should
funds.
Be senior housing grants, additional funds. We're not going to address supplemental.
Okie doke. Okay. The proposal is then that we increase the senior citizen program by $10 million and adjust the appropriation so that the federal requirement is alleviated. Is there objection? Okay.
I don't think so.
So would you work with Lynn, or I don't know if you need any help on what they're talking about, but get that, so we get that taken care of. Anything else?
That's all I have unless...
Okay, I want to point out that I'm interested in getting that language on the graduation towards the 10 and towards the ratchet rate, but I can't really guarantee that that's going to be the final decision of the committee. If we get really pushed for funds, we may have to essentially, instead of saying we're going to combine the programs, we just say that we didn't fund the HFC rural program and we just funded your program and made some changes in it or whatever, and so... So, you know, that would be what happened. So,
Mr. Chairman, just one other thing. What was there a decision with respect to the home site, no thank you.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we're not going to take it.
Okay, no more.
What would happen if we have the interest loans for the non-conforming and the removed housing separately, but combined? You know what I mean? Just keep the interest rates for the separate interest rates, and but combine the program.
I think there are two. There are differences, but they're too close that it would make much sense.
So it would be awful awkward to explain why you did that. And we could always blame the legislature, but.
Okay, any other questions, these folks? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I want to see you guys afterwards.
Okay,
excuse me, Mr. Rose, did you say you were going to be in Juneau here for a little while?
No, I'm catching a flight tonight.
Oh, right now?
When do you think you get us that?
Telephone work.
I may never get
them. The next 3 weeks.
Well, it's hot.
Now, Mr. Carney?
Yes.
What? I don't, you have on my list any question on the, oh yes I do too. Oh, I see, it's in the wrong spot, should be under. Changes to include loans for clearing the land. Is that the only question you have?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was asked to bring along the justification for our $10 million request.
What do we have in our bill? Yeah. Okay. We'll bypass that $10 million question. If we start cutting, we'll call you back.
I can either of you.
That's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I've got the amendments. I was here, it was a month ago, we talked about those. I don't know if you've got questions about them.
It was, I think the committee at that time, who was here, I think we might have gotten pretty short by that time, but I didn't really have an objection, I don't think. The problem was you just wanted to increase your authority so you could loan for land clearing.
Right.
And was there a cost associated with that?
No, because we were going to have the proceeds from the repayment of the loans, the Delta project, come back into the fund.
Did we have to change statute to authorize that?
Yeah, we thought so.
Okay, do you have...
The reason being that where the statutes are now, if you didn't change them, then the amount that we loan them for the clearing loans would be detracted or subtracted from the amount we could loan for the farm. And it would short our ability to loan to the farm.
Okay, so you have a way to change the statute to, I guess, recapture some of this that would go into the general fund and then utilize it for that. Right. How much do you think that program would take in terms of what actually, how much dollars would you do in that program this year?
This year? Well, there'll be no repayments to it until...
I mean, how many loans would you make for clearing the land and then for what rate?
It's this coming year?
Yeah.
Not more, 2 or 3. Until we start getting revenues from repayments from Delta, we won't have any money in that fund to make loans. The idea is to take the money from the Delta land clearing loans, and I think the changes there, you have to have a passage of, I think it's Senate Bill 804, which would authorize those funds to come back into the loan fund. Once we get that, then once they start being repaid to the fund, we take those funds and revolve them back out of the other.
Is there the motion then would be to accept the language? And have you got something close to worked out that you could provide?
We've provided it already. Carl, don't you have it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Lynn, do you have a question?
Well, this is the various changes to Title III.
Right.
I just need to get in touch with you about some of the details of the form and the drafting, not the substance. I just had some trouble with reading the thing when I looked at it from Carl.
Okay. Then the proposal would be to make the changes necessary, include them in the omnibus committee substitute to allow for loans for clearing of land. Is there objection to that? No cost associated with it this year.
Mr. Chairman, there was one other point too, and that was that we also were interested in seeing there are a couple minor language things which I can go over with staff, but we also wanted to see permission given the department to institute a sliding escalating interest scale so we could gradually weed requirements away from the loan fund and get them into commercial sources over a period of years.
Yeah.
Remember
did
that?
You have a proposal?
Yeah, we have three options on that. One of them gives the department the responsibility of adopting regulations to do so. One of them sets the scale by legislation, and one of them actually just tells us that we can set any interest scale as long as it's over 6%.
What are you now, 6%?
We're a maximum of 8.
Maximum of 8, and the statutory one, what is it? Is it some sort of system that keeps increasing, or how does it work?
Just a minute here.
Tell you what we can
do.
Says,
here's what it says. It says, for new borrowers and those having borrowed for less than 5 years, the interest shall be 6% for each year exceeding 5 years. The interest rate for new loans shall increase by 1% per year. That's the statutory scale. If we did a regulation, that's probably what we'd start with, but the regulations, of course, would go to the public for comment.
Okay, well, I why don't we do this? Why don't you give us those proposals there, and we won't, since that's something we could go over at a time, different time when we got a little more time, we'll take that up at a future meeting as how to graduate that one up. But I think that's consistent with the other things we want to do, and we have accepted those other changes. Is there anything else?
Not far around.
Okay, thank you. Okay. We may be calling you on that.
Sure.
If we have questions, but be later.
I'm going to get a bit.
Okay, how do I reach you? What's your number?
Who's Sharon? Do you know Sharon Mark?
Okay,
He's the
commissioner
for
the DNR.
Okay.
It's just some of the.
Somebody pull the door
shut there. I had some trouble with the structure of this.
This related to the veterans.
Which sections apply to which kind of loan?
We don't have.
Which changes apply to.
That would be.
I can go without.
If you get questions, you need to call.
Yeah. They wanted to go to option three.
Okay. And there's no billing for this.
There is no billing.
Well, he said.
Okay, so we need to get the. Very good. And this is already. This is complete and would be.
Okay. My understanding.
Sufficient. Okay. Very good.
There's also one in the
package. Okay, without objection, then we'll take the proper steps to notify the right people so that this tries to happen. How's that sound?
Yep, got to do it.
Commissioner, go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, first of all, a question about your pleasure here. Since we are at 10 minutes after 4, we have some written materials that describe an idea that we believe will is feasible and, to the best of our knowledge, superior to most of the other ideas, if not all of them, to deal with the problem of multifamily housing. But I think the discussion of multifamily housing is going to take more than the 20 minutes that remains before I have to go catch the airplane. It's basically an option with you if you would like to get started in this and partway through, or if you'd rather have the subject as a whole. Later on this coming week, I'll be back in June.
Just let me ask a couple questions. You're representing Ada. Is there any other problem or question that you need legislative attention to in terms of the Ada program, terms of money or statutory changes besides the multifamily question? It's the only one we have listed. I just wondered if there's anything else you recommend for us to look at.
Amazingly enough, we put all the pieces together last year. And
we did it correctly.
Well, there were a few flaws that were identified here and there in the legislative audit, but those have been administratively remedied.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. Didn't you say you had all his material in writing?
Yes.
We had some of the materials in writing.
Not all of them.
Well, the discussion about why options are curtailed. I mean, I think it's important to explain. At first blush, there's a lot of different ways a person can go or an agency can go in terms of planning multifamily housing. The problem is practical constraints that are not necessarily obvious cause a lot of those avenues, in fact, to be dead ends. And so I think in the discussion of this proposal, which we're perfectly willing to pass out to you. But I think, in fact, it would be useful to pass it out today and then perhaps have a hearing later would be my suggestion, because you can understand what the proposal is from this, and then we can discuss why the other ways were blind ends.
Okay. When's the first time you could get back here then?
I'll be back in Juneau, coming in on the Wednesday morning flight from Anchorage. The reason I'm going up to Anchorage, of course, is to put together the Petroleum Revenue Board.
Well, that's something you probably ought to do.
Put together what?
The Petroleum Revenue Board, yeah.
In light of the OPEC meeting.
Why do you have to do that in Anchorage?
Well, there's several reasons why we're doing that in Anchorage. First of all, the staff is there, the computer is there, and the oil company is there, aside from that.
But the commissioner isn't, because the capital's in Juneau. Okay, let me just ask you some basic questions about it, so we can and then we'll just have this other meeting later. How much multifamily housing would go on under your program?
It could be $100 million a year.
And a year? What would the cost to the state be, if any, and how would we be financing it?
Source of funds would be from the illiquid portfolio of veterans loans that the general fund currently has. There would be some sacrifice of the income stream that generates, which amounts to $7 million a year, a little over seven. It's $107 million in the portfolio. The return on that is 6.9 plus percent, so roughly 7% of $100 million, a little over $7 million altogether. And so that income stream to the general fund would be foregone, but on the other hand, you'd be able to at least do $100 million worth of loans with that portfolio right there. And as we have, when we have an acute need.
Would you come down to threes?
Or where would you start?
Five? They would obviously not have to be owner-occupied.
No, these would be businesses.
Well, why wouldn't you want to come down to threes and fours? And
well, you start running into real problems, because you, in order to do tax exempt financing, you have to have at least 20% of your units in low income. And so when you have a threeplex, you're having 1/3 of your units in low income. It's the minimum you can have, one unit. You know, it makes it harder for the project to pencil.
Okay. And what interest rate are we looking at?
It
would be around 11.
To the borrower, well, it would be 11 plus the servicing fee of about 0.5%, so 11.5 to the developer.
Well, that's good. Better than Bedford?
Almost too good to be true.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. we don't need it at 11% to provide good multiple housing.
Good, then we can do more.
Or rental housing, I mean.
Then we can do more.
Are you subsidizing the rate?
As long as you know, there's artificial rate in Alaska of 12 3/8% for housing. Is there any good reason why it should be less than that?
Yes, they
really don't.
No.
Okay, how does that fall with those people who have existing rental units around? What will that take them out of a competitive position?
No.
Money at these rates?
You're going to, in order for these things to work, about the maximum that you can charge is $600 to $650 a month for your units. After that, people will leave the units and try to get into one of the AHSC programs and own a house or a mobile home or whatever
right.
It might be. So you can't charge more than that. The market is already at that level, so you're not going to be displacing existing people. And the trick is not, I mean, it's, there's no problem about coming in with $300 a month rentals under this program. The trick is to get the rentals down to $600 and still be able to meet the debt service.
Okay, and you're figuring what, a two-bedroom unit?
Two-bedroom, 750 square foot, 600 market rent.
At 11%, you still can't get it below that.
That's right.
What kind of construction cost you for you?
$50 per.
Well, I know guys will build them all day long for 40 in Fairbanks. But anyway, if it won't pencil anything better than that, why?
What can we do?
much.
Well, that's why I say there's a lot of context to give you with regard to the proposal about why other alternatives end up with less attractive or non-feasible solutions.
Do you need any statutory changes?
Yes, there. I mean, it may be, that's a question that will be up to you. There will have to be a statutory change at least to allow the program to be done. Right now, if it were done through, say, ADA, ADA does not have the authority to make multifamily housing. So you have to at least amend it to give that authority. The more you want to dictate what the structure is of the program, the more detail the enactments will have to be. It could also be run through ASHA.
I mean, what would your proposal be on terms of that? I mean, what I'd like for you to do is to come, when you do come back to us, to have any statutory changes that you advocate. I mean, we might have more, but any that you advocate or that you even think perhaps we might want to consider. Could you have them at least in mind and hopefully
we will. You understand the practical difficulties.
You're not at that point yet. I mean, this is sort of
we have a proposal, but I think we first need to get the reaction from you. I mean, if you're not interested in the idea, it also depends on what you're going to have the hearing. If you're going to have the hearing on Wednesday, I'm going to be spending between now and then working on revenue forecast.
Yeah. Okay, trying to ask you to do something impossible. I thought maybe you might have already had it.
No, unfortunately, this is an idea that surfaced very, very recently, and in fact, it surfaced in part because of problems that developed with Anchorage's attempt to meet this same issue.
Let me ask that for the way you're using these illiquid assets is you're spreading them out over a number of years, right? Okay. And you're taking that little income stream. Now the other way we can do it is we can just take general fund cash, which would take us $7 million this year, right?
Yeah.
And then we could take those illiquid assets and we could appropriate them in a month to AHFC and their program, and we could tell them to discount to present value, whatever the right terminology there is, and take that whole amount and apply it against their needed subsidy for this year and save about $70 million, which is sort of short run maximizing and maybe not long term maximizing at all. But in terms of this particular revenue crunch, $7 million, we could add $7 million, subtract $70 or $80 million, we'd have a net saving of $60 or $70 million that might really be important for the following reason. I mean, there's guys like Eric Sutcliffe who's really trying to kill the whole program. I mean, he wants to kill the special mortgage program of HFC, and he's serious. He's going around trying to count votes, and there's quite a few votes that might back him up. And his contention is that it's, since there's been announced by the House Finance Chairman that there's not going to be a capital budget, and I know these things are subject to change. If your numbers come out really high, well, maybe that makes people think differently, but there's no capital budget. He's saying, well, the hell with the program. I want to take that $130 million or whatever it is and use it for capital, which I could see his point. If we could save $60 million, we might be able to, politically, it might have an advantageous effect. What's your opinion?
Well, I think if you're thinking of $60 million, you're overstating the value of the portfolio. Of the veterans' loans, there's $108.75 million. In principal amount, and their yield is just 0.3 of a point below 7% average. So if you discount those just to reflect the interest rate difference between what those are and what rates for comparable instruments would be now, you're probably looking at 40 cents on a dollar. And that's before you start looking at the quality. So it is a really heavy duty discount that AHFC would be making.
From an economic point of view, does it make more sense to use an income stream off of an instrument like these that would have to be heavily discounted? Does it make more sense to wait it out and take the income over the long term than to pull it all out at once? Which way do you make out better?
The income stream is better.
The income stream is better because the FHA springs on the loan. It'll pay off faster than the discount rate.
You mean they'll pay off before?
Yeah.
And so you can get the prepayments out of them.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And then you want those won't be discounted.
Right.
Yeah, they're ignored when you're discounting it and marking it to market.
Yeah.
But there in fact is an experience of prepayment. Although I must say with 7% money there's not much experience.
That'd be sort of foolish.
Well,
especially if they're suitable.
People move or people die. And you know,
of course with our second,
we can't control that.
With our second one was for purchase, maybe they'll just be rolled.
Well, you still haven't solved the problem with death, so that I mean, eventually there'll be rollovers from that. As the borrowers pass on. Well, if you don't have any objection, why don't we distribute the materials
that
we have now?
Representative Bedwell, I'm sorry, I forgot all about you.
Thanks.
Looking right at you.
Okay, things are coming back to me now in this program using the 20%. Low income, you can go to the tax-free market.
That's right.
What would happen if you had a program with just conventional rental housing?
Then you're looking
go through that program.
Then you have to have a subsidy because you're looking at bond costs of 18 or 19%.
Okay, that would be similar to your conventional housing program.
It would be even higher rates than those because the market does not see multifamily housing as sound an investment as owner-occupied homes.
How many units are we talking about?
2,000 units.
And would they be distributed proportionally?
The intention is it's a statewide program where the need is where it would be met.
When you have legitimate proposals through banks, yes.
Yeah, it's not direct lending, of course. It would go through a bank, and there are controls in there. The bank, of course, is going to have to want a piece of the action.
Are we going to be accused of really making a lot of money for the builder?
No, yeah, because when we get recaptured, the subsidy we get, given, we get the interest rate back down to 11% when you recapture it. It's a recapture.
But it's not when it's sold. The best thing to do is rather than anticipate what the proposal is and describing it in little fits and snatches now, is perhaps not try to describe it, but let you read the whole thing first, and then we can talk
about
it.
Yeah, no, I don't want you to describe it. I just in terms of, I don't want you to explain it. I just want you to tell me yes or no on whether or not you anticipate that as a big problem.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there were a subsidy, then I wouldn't want to see it in ADA, because ADA is to finance business loans, and the consensus of the legislature has been that business loans are different from homes. Mm-hmm. And these are not necessarily going to be benefiting renters, except by making units available, but they're really loans to the businessmen who are building them, you know, and so it is a business. And we've got the principle with ADA that businesses that are financed through it do not get a subsidy unless the federal government is the provider of that subsidy. And I'd like to keep that principle intact. It's an important principle,
okay.
And that's why we've come up, that's why this proposal, I think, is a pleasant surprise, because it does maintain that. It does not...
Okay, it'll allow us to do $100
million,
mm-hmm. And the HFC program is going to do another $56 million, I think, is what they said, something like that. So we're going to have statewide about $150 million. What kind of impact do you think that would have on the total crisis of rent? Is that significant?
What do you figure?
It would go away.
Would it?
In 1 year.
Because at these rent levels, you have people leaving there and going over to the ownership fund. And keep their hands in that demand, it's kind of an ephemeral demand.
Yeah.
Once the rates come up high enough, demand starts leaving you because of product substitution.
Yeah.
What do you figure the cost per unit?
I'm figuring a construction cost of $37.5, but by the time we have it capitalized, because you're getting up to $50.
So you're going to figure
50,000 units
per unit.
What's the per square foot building cost?
$50 a square.
$50, you said.
To build.
Okay, that sounds real
about
good.
Right.
We'll take that up as soon as we can arrange a meeting with you come back. Sterling, how about your schedule?
I'm down back in town.
We're figuring
this gentleman. on Friday.
Yeah, and Friday evening.
So we're not going to get the two of you together, will
you? No, well. I can reroute one of my associates there.
Okay, whatever, we'll work that out. Is there any way that Ada can, without subsidy, can help, well, you know, there's so many people out there that want help, so, but I mean, we have an unusual situation where, you know, we've got some kind of loans that just go like hotcakes, right, and you can really do business in this area, but over here you just can't do any business at all because there's no program for it, you know, different kinds of businesses and different kinds of loans and stuff, and I know one of the things that we were talking about was, you know, I don't know, I've had all sorts of requests, loans for land and loans for, you know, for the purchasing of land, I guess, to then improve later and things like that. I mean, is that just sort of out of the question? Or?
I think so. For one thing, there, I mean, you have two purposes, I suppose. At least I would if I were a legislator. I would have one that I want to satisfy the desires of my constituents, but the other is I want to have programs that meet the needs of the public. We have a need of the public right now that's due to a shortage of rental housing.
Yeah.
We don't have a shortage of undeveloped land, except perhaps in disposing of it, but we don't have, there's a lot of undeveloped land available, and I think there's a lot of conventional ways still that people can acquire it.
What's your definition of undeveloped land?
Something that doesn't have a house on it.
Okay, developed land but not occupied by a structure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of developed land without a structure on it. Yeah.
Probably with utilities on it.
With or without it.
Both.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that discussion to later. I haven't seen that much complaint, but I don't know what we can do about it either, because any of those programs are going to take state subsidies.
And ultimately you reach a limit of the stretching of the resources that are available, and then you have to decide which ones are accomplishing the most good for the most people. And obviously that's part of your deliberation process, but I think we all recognize that, you know, with unlimited resources, you'd be able to take care of unlimited needs, but they're not unlimited, and hence, you can't cover all the possible needs.
Okay, so we'll just let you catch your plane, and we'll get back to you later when we kind of reconvene here next week, probably on Wednesday.
That'd be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
You gonna let us read that stuff?
He's asking.
Right there.
Oh, okay.
Is there anybody else that wants to make a statement or comment on anything here? Did you want to say something?
I can't wait.
Okay. There are people from the... The only things we have left to take up are consolidating the Fishman's Mortgage and Note Fund with the Comp Fishing Loan Fund, which I think nobody's opposed to. It sounds like a reasonable idea. I don't know if you remember that as arguments or not.
I don't know if feelings one way or the other.
And then we're going to make some changes in the amounts of the loans there, and also the child care facilities. Do you want to go into that now?
Yeah, why don't we? It's very brief. There has been some move in the Senate to extend the number of years that you can have your loan, and from 10 years to 20 years. And it seems reasonable that if a person borrowed so much money that they could come back and repay it in a 20-year period rather than 10-year requirement. So there is a proposal in your packet to extend the period of time of borrowing. It still would be $50,000, but the repayment clause would change from 10 to 20. And of course, the recommendation that we put in $400,000 for the loan rather than $200,000. So that is the amount that we have in the memo that I sent out to all the members.
Did you want an increase from 200 to 400, you said?
No,
yeah,
no.
From 200,000 to 400,000.
Wasn't that part of it too?
Right.
And then increase the term from 10 to 20.
Is there a reason? I know there's obviously a reason for it, but what is the reason for that?
To be increased the
loan amount and also in the from 10 to 20.
We I have a memo in the package explains that we have found out that there would be more people borrowing from the program if people knew about it, because the department has never really done any public information on this. Can be maybe 1978. We haven't done any since then. My staff made a phone survey and discovered that most of the providers don't even know it existed. So now we're getting requests for at least the loan application for the program. And as far as the increasing it from 10 years to 20 years, they don't make too much money in the, you know, these programs. And when we give them a little bit more time to make the repayment, that we feel that they will take advantage more of the program than just leaving it alone. It's just, you know, to give them the incentive to improve their facilities for the kids.
Mr. Chairman?
There's also a residential care facility program. That have you done any looking into that, Thelma?
We have looked into that. In fact, I think Bill Mines and I put the books in, this, in the thing in the statutes. But again, that's another problem. Nobody borrows because it's so little money, and the conditions for borrowing are so outrageous